Just over a year has passed since the Uluru Statement from the Heart was delivered, a statement the government subsequently rejected. Malcolm Turnbull has again voiced his opposition to the idea in a comment which essentially outraged many Indigenous leaders. He said that the government will not be making plans to hold a referendum on the proposal. The Joint Select Committee on Constitutional Recognition relating to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples has recently released their interim report examining the idea of an Indigenous voice to Parliament. Liberal MP Julian Leeser is the co-chair of that committee. Welcome back to RN Drive.
Good to be with you, Patricia.
So the committee released its interim report in late July. And there has been the Garma Festival where this was a central debating point, many Indigenous leaders talking about it. And then at the end of that weekend, the Prime Minister was asked and said that he completely rejects the idea of a voice being put in the Constitution. Is that helpful?
Well, Patricia, the Prime Minister basically reiterated the comments he'd made previously. They were not a surprise to me and so on. What we've got is an interim report here. Prime Minister has previously rejected and repeated those comments, one particular version of the voice. That's an elected, entrenched, Indigenous-only body in the Constitution. What we've done in the interim report is provide a range of principles, a whole range of models, and asked people some substantive questions about what the voice might look like. Uluru was very important because it changed the debate about the direction of constitutional recognition, but it didn't provide what the voice would actually look like. What the Prime Minister has also said, both earlier and again in his recent statement, was that he's keen to work with local people to solve local issues on the ground, and he gave the example of the work he's done recently in Tennant Creek. As we've been hearing from people across the country, Indigenous people have told us that they want local voices dealing with local issues in their own communities because that's where the real challenges are. And so, to some extent, the Prime Minister and local Indigenous voices are very much on the same page there. We're looking forward to the responses that we're going to get from the interim report and to providing our final report at the end of the year.
But in your report, and I've seen your report, you keep alive as an option the idea of a constitutional voice entrenched in the Constitution, a voice to the Parliament. The PM, while all the Indigenous leadership of the country was meeting at Garma, said no. How can you be doing two of these things at the same time?
Well, we haven't taken any options off the table. Our terms
but the
of
PM keeps taking it off the table.
Our terms of reference ask us to look at a range of options, to look at the previous reports and to put forward a range of options that will have broad support among Indigenous people as well as broad political support and support of the broader Australian community. At an interim report stage, our task at the moment is to try and help define what the voice might look like and have a range of different models that we can
But you've
put
kept
forward.
On the table that it would be possibly in the Constitution and the PM says no way.
Well, the PM has said that there is one particular model of constitutional recognition that he doesn't particularly want, and he's been clear about that. But he hasn't ruled out a whole range of other models of constitutional recognition, and I think it's important that our terms of reference direct us to look at those.
Give me some options that he hasn't ruled out in your view.
Well, look, I don't want to put words in the PM's mouth, but you know what he said is that he's ruling out a directly elected Indigenous-only body in the Constitution.
So if it's not directly elected?
Well, look, you could interpret his words in that way. You could interpret his words as, you know, something that's not in the Constitution. You know, there's a range of ways that you could interpret the PM's words.
But what is clear, though, Julian, Leeser, is that that Indigenous leaders have made it quite clear that it must be in the Constitution. They do not want it legislated.
Well, look, there's a range of different views about the way in which this should proceed. Some Indigenous leaders have said that we should be looking at legislative options first as a way of moving things from legislation to the Constitution. All of these issues are still to be determined. This is why you put out an interim report. No doubt the government will respond to the final report when it comes out at the end of the year. But the purpose of the interim report is to continue the debate, to continue the discussion about some of these issues and to try and put more meat on the bone to develop the voice model, both in the Constitution and the aspects of the voice that might be outside the Constitution.
The PM has raised concerns, and he said it on Sunday when asked, with the idea that it would be Indigenous only. Do you have an issue with that?
I don't want to express a concluded view on what the voice would look like, but clearly this is a body that is designed to consult and engage Indigenous people on the policies and services and programs that affect them. you have to have Indigenous people on the body. One of the things we have said is that in relation to anything that might come out of the final report, that there will need to be a co-design process with government and Indigenous people working together about looking at how the voice might actually operate on the ground. And so to that extent, I think it's very important that the models that are designed at the end of this process are worked on together with government and with Indigenous people.
The Prime Minister didn't come to the Garma conference, neither did the opposition leader. But of course, the people at this conference made it crystal clear, I know I was there, that they still supported the Uluru Statement of the Heart. It was read out in Yolngu language. It was read out in English at the opening ceremony of the biggest Indigenous festival in this country. Was it helpful for the Prime Minister to say what he said on Sunday?
Well, look, the Prime Minister has been consistent in his view here. I mean,
That's not the question. Was it helpful?
Well, I'm just saying the Prime Minister has been consistent in his view here. I mean, I think it would be strange for the Prime Minister to have offered a different view suddenly. But, you know, we will continue to work on the report here, and we will maintain the ability of looking at a whole range of different options.
Does it make it difficult when he says things like that?
It doesn't make it difficult. You know, the Prime Minister has a particular view. It's good that he's been clear on the view so people know what his view is. But we're going to continue to work to try to get a range of options and listen to Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians between now and our final report in November.
Do you accept that Indigenous Australians overwhelmingly favour the body being in the Constitution?
We heard a range of different views about this. What was very, very clear from our report is that there is strong support for the voice proposal. There is very strong support from both Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians. But what the body looks like, and Uluru gave us a direction, they didn't give us any specific details, and the purpose of our parliamentary committee is to look at what the voice might actually look like and how it might work, how people might be chosen to sit on it, whether it would be local, regional, national, what functions it will have, all those sorts of questions. And that's why we've developed such a detailed interim report.
If you're just tuning in, this is RN Drive. I'm Patricia Carvelis, and my guest is Liberal MP Julian Lisa, who's the co-chair of that committee looking at, well, what will happen on constitutional reform and recognising Indigenous Australians as our first Australians, the mechanisms there. The Business Council of Australia said in their submission they want a referendum on this by 2020. Is that something realistic?
Well, look, it's very hard to have a referendum on something until you've actually worked out the detail. I mean, there's no agreement on what a constitutional amendment will look like here. There's no agreement on what the details of the voice might look like. So I'm not going to set out a date and say we should have XYZ by a certain date. Our job is to come up with the mechanisms. I mean, if the voice is going to work, if it's going to make a difference to Indigenous people's lives on the ground, we've got to get the detail right. And that's our job on this committee, to try and get the structures working properly.
Noel Pearson says it's a life and death matter for his people. Do you agree?
Well, look, that's Noel's view. It's not for me to run a commentary on.
But do you think it's a life and death matter for Indigenous Australians?
I think it's an extremely important matter for Indigenous Australians. And I think, you know, when you look at things like the incarceration rates, the poor employment outcomes, the poor health outcomes that they have compared to other Australians, we need to do better in the policy-making space. And I've always thought that engaging people who are affected by policy directly on the policies that affect them should lead to a better outcome. And that's what this has to be about at the end of the day, improved economic and social outcomes for Indigenous people.
You're not only on the Constitutional Recognition Committee, you're also on the Parliamentary Committee on Human Rights, which you want to see abolished because you say it's been hijacked. Why has it been hijacked?
Well, this is a committee that is very different to any other committee in the Parliament. It's not a committee that gets evidence and where parliamentarians can exercise their discretion based on competing views and come up with a response. It's a committee where a report is pre-written and we are effectively asked to rubber stamp whether legislation, whether we like it or not, effectively breaches 7 human rights conventions that most Australians would be unaware of, and certainly very, very few Australians would be aware of the details. I don't think that that's an appropriate mechanism to protect human rights, and I don't think it's an appropriate function of the Parliament. And when Australia signed these conventions, a committee of this sort would never have been imagined. You know, it's fair enough that we should report on from time to time on how we're going with implementing aspects of the conventions, but using these conventions and using this committee to, as a yardstick against these conventions, I think is a illegitimate use of the Parliament's time. And I've really found it most unsatisfying being on this particular committee.
Okay, but is abolishing the committee a bit like throwing the baby out with the bathwater? Why not just change exactly what the committee looks at, like your colleague Ian Goodenough is calling for?
Well, because I think that effectively if the job of the committee is to look at these seven human rights instruments, which is fundamentally what the committee is about, and to look at whether government-prepared compatibility statements meet those seven human rights instruments, I don't think that that's a legitimate function for the committee. I'm not saying for a minute that the Parliament shouldn't have a committee looking at human rights abuses, and the Parliament does. It's the very good subcommittee of the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee that looks at genuine human rights issues like the death penalty, like the position of women and girls, like live organ harvesting issues. They are real human rights issues. The trivial nature of the human rights issues that this committee looks at, because every piece of legislation is assessed, is, for instance, you know, whether somebody who's a drunken sailor using their boat on Jervis Bay, whether legislation to get them to have a random breath test breaches human rights. You know, too often the work that this committee does is a collateral attack on government legislation, preferring the rights of people like sex offenders and deadbeat dads, and failing to consider the safety of the broader community.
Just on a few other issues very quickly, Fraser Anning says the acknowledgement of country in the Senate should be abolished instead of the prayer reading. What do you think of that?
I disagree with him. I don't think that they should abolish either of those things. I think they're both appropriate things. I'm not a senator, but we have both of those things in the House. I'm for the prayer and I'm also for the acknowledgement of country.
Why are you for the acknowledgement of country?
Because I think it's appropriate in this day and age that we acknowledge the fact that Indigenous people have been here for now over 60,000 years, that we're meeting on land that is their traditional land. I think it's a nice, appropriate and dignified way to acknowledge that aspect of our history before commencing the Parliament's proceedings.
And Julie and Lisa, it's something happening, well, very close to us, but Jacinda Ardern has returned to work and she has said that her daughter will be raised speaking Maori language in English. Is that the sort of world in Australia you'd like us to live in as well?
Well, I think it would be great if more Australians knew some Indigenous languages. I mean, I think you enrich the country by doing that. It's my understanding of New Zealand is that the Maori have one language, whereas in Australia there are hundreds of different Indigenous languages and so on. So I think it's a nice thing that Australians know more about the culture of the First Peoples here, and that's something I've always felt we don't know enough about as the broader community here.
Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thanks, Patricia.
Julie and Lisa there, the co-chair of the Joint Select Committee on Constitutional Recognition relating to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples.